Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this afternoon's session. My name is Morgan. I work at Microsoft as a technical evangelist. And this session today really is around understanding the operations role within this term DevOps that has kind of taken off in the last couple of years. And so today really focuses on to understand what Microsoft's strategy is, what their view is around the operations team within this DevOps, and our tooling that is associated to that. And ideally, today's session should give you an intro into that view that we have and give you a view of our thinking, where we're going around the different components. And ideally, the takeaways will be quite useful going back either as yourself if you're a developer working with operations or vice versa if you're an operations person in the room today going back to collaborate and work with your development teams. And how do both then work with your relevant business people? So that's the view of what we're going to go through in today's session. From an objectives perspective, the first piece really is just to set the tone in a couple of slides to understand what is this term DevOps. And ideally, if you are one of these three personas, what is your takeaway from DevOps and what would your role be within this DevOps movement that is going on at the moment? Then we'll spend the rest of the session digging a little bit deeper into the technical components, the actual tools. What does Microsoft have out there at the moment that will cater for different components maybe that you would use in your infrastructure? Whether you integrate with development tools, whether it be public cloud, private cloud, or a hybrid scenario. And ideally, you can take this away and then look at the investments possibly that yourself or the business has made within the likes of Windows Server, System Center, Visual Studio, Visual Studio Online, Microsoft Azure. If those investments have been made, you've possibly seen some information this week which is prompting you to possibly make some investments in some of those technologies. What can I get out of that that's going to provide value back to me as an individual, operations person or a developer, but in the bigger picture back to the business? Because ideally that will increase the life cycle of me having investments from the business on the other side. So that's the objectives with the session today. I'm going to step through a different couple of phases within our framework, and then we're going to look at some of the configuration components from the tools, quite a quick look at the configuration, and then more how do the tools work together, and then have a bit of a takeaway with regards to understanding how would you use these components. From a takeaways perspective, in this deck, there's quite a few notes. So I've put a lot of URLs in the different sections in the notes section of the PowerPoint. So if you see me show a configuration step or I explain something around Visual Studio and System Center integrating, I've got a URL in the notes section on how to do that. So don't get too fussed by taking pictures or looking at the screenshots. I've tried to make it as simple as possible from a takeaways perspective once you have left TechEd this week. And ideally, you can grab a business card with me afterwards. If you want more follow-on information around how-tos, I'll gladly assist with those different components. All right, so to move into the session, we normally show the slide at the end of every session or every end of presentation. There's related content, there's components. I've put this one up a little bit earlier. I'd like to just give a view of what we're doing around educating operations and development people and the business overarching as well around our move around DevOps. The first piece is a jumpstart that we did a few months ago. A new version will come out in a short while. But ideally, there's a URL. If you'd want to have a 5 to 5.5 hour view of what I'm showing you now at a much deeper level, that's a URL where you can pull some content off the Microsoft Virtual Academy. The other component really is one that was run recently, about a month ago, around actually doing an assessment in your environment. How would you approach if you're looking to implement and work down this DevOps movement? And it's quite a really good in-depth bit of content around from Microsoft and third-party speakers on how to approach, how to assess, and take it a little bit further. And those are free content to download off the Virtual Academy for consumption. And the other one is the actual interactive one from a content distribution perspective. So a blog that is managed by our enterprise evangelism team out in Redmond, looked after by Volker, constantly putting content out, whether it be Microsoft, whether it be third party, whether it be both together. And that is really kind of a wealth of information that you can actually take away and use in your own time. So those are three locations that is really worthwhile either bookmarking, saving, or taking a bit further next week when you get back home. All right, into a bit of the content. So the first couple of slides, really just positioning this DevOps thing. On the left-hand side, you'll have a bit of a view of kind of industry terms around DevOps. So really it's an emerging trend that promises to increase the flow of value to our customers. Great. What does that mean for me as an operations person? What does it mean for me as a developer? If I'm the business investing money, what does that mean for me? And on the right-hand side is an interesting little excerpt that came out from a quote from the CIO magazine. And there's two nice little pieces of words in there that's worthwhile taking away. It has been said that the only sustainable advantage of business is the ability for a company to learn faster and to respond more effectively than its competitors. And that's two very interesting little pieces. And so as I go through some of the demonstrations today, I'm going to refer back to those kind of words. This is a way for you to learn faster as an operations person, as a developer. This is where you can take some learnings away for the next version, the next iteration, the move to public cloud. Ideally, coming back to that comment, showing value back to the business, and ideally the customers at the end of the day. So it's really good to understand that in the long term, you need to provide that value back to the different people that you have to obviously report to, as well as the customers that might be your base outside of your environment. This little interesting slide around the elephant in the room and what is DevOps, depending who you ask, where you ask him, where he works, what his view is, everyone has a different view of DevOps. And ideally, that conversation will always be such. But the next 60, 65 minutes or so of the session is to give you Microsoft's view of where we're going with our product set, what our view is of DevOps, and where operations and developers fit in together, and how we should always pull back as two entities with the business in the long run. So this is the traditional scenario. Now, I'm not sure if people in the room have ever experienced this. The business wants, it expects, it invests, but between dev and operations, normally there's a bit of conflict. Whether it be from an operations perspective, devs are rolling out code, unrestricted, unchecked, unbalanced, and might lead to issues that generate calls, generate SLA breaches, etc. So a little bit of frustration that gets generated. The other side is also needs to be taken into account by the operations team. I need to understand, what is a developer actually trying to achieve? Why is he trying to produce code so quickly, updates so quickly, new versions so quickly? He wants to show return back to the business. The downside is this is traditionally how operations and devs have worked together. And we're trying to move across from that now and trying to give a view on how to approach and make changes to that scenario in the last slide. These three stages you'll see on the next slide is the view that we have around how do you approach moving to a DevOps movement? How do we take into account what I should start to work with? And there's been some interesting conversations this week that we've had with developers and operations people and hearing the pain on both sides. And that's always been the key point. There's always been pain. There's never been a person that's come to us this week and said, life's great. I love rolling out VMs and I love doing this and I love taking 3 weeks to roll an app out. There's not been one person who's come and said that. Because the real world is the last slide. And so ideally we're trying to drive a movement now within Microsoft to ease that pain with tools you own or tools you'd like to invest in. How do I start to use those components to make it a little bit better? The downside is if you don't start to take this action from left to right, you're never going to start to get to a dynamic environment. The first stage, around people. How do I actually start to engage with developers on the other side, operations on the other side, and the business who always seem to be requesting more and spending more money with us along the way? If that conversation is not happening, if that interaction is not happening, you can forget about the second and third stage and moving forward into a DevOps environment. So if you do not speak to your developers, if you don't speak to your operations people, if business is not interacting with both of you together, with planning, with solution, with architecture, there's always going to be a disconnect. And so ideally we're driving that conversation more and more around the interaction with those personas. And as I go through the components, I'm going to speak today around people, those three areas, and how do they start to build into process and using the products that they actually own. And the process is a key one. The downside to the second stage is for everyone in the room, process will always be different. Either you don't have process, which is the real world in some scenarios, or you have a very custom defined process that might have its own boundaries and own security complications, whether it be technical or whether it actually just be normal process. So that piece over there needs to be taken into account by all three personas. The business, who should be driving process, and the operations and IT professional feeding back and saying, well, we want to become more dynamic. We want to possibly build our own private cloud and provide self-service to developers. Or we want to use a new version of tool sets for writing applications or writing code. How do we feed that back? How does this start to be a journey around the process component? And the last piece, and unfortunately many people start with the last one and then realize when they start to actually get to reality, they should have started in the beginning and built process around that and then possibly had a discussion a bit earlier with their counterparts along the way. So the people in process, always custom to you in the room. The product sets, however, from Microsoft are kind of standard, and they're always going to evolve along the way with versions and iterations as we go forward. Looking on the right-hand side, building in people and process, and we'll dig a little bit deeper into that in a couple of slides. On the left-hand side, the tool sets. Now, on the left-hand side is, you obviously had a lot of information this week around cloud, private, public, hybrid, etc. Our tool sets start to match out alongside that now. And now we're just looking at the Microsoft component. So if you look at private into a hybrid scenario, we have Windows Server as the platform. We have System Center for Management. We have Visual Studio with the relevant components within Visual Studio for developers, stretching across private into a hybrid scenario. And then the ever-growing public cloud component, the Azure piece. Whether it be the services that I personally struggle to keep up with around announcements and growth, again, the benefits are you can pull what you need when you need out of those services. And then the online component for Visual Studio, VSO. And we'll spend a bit of time discussing that as we go through different sections today. Again, very much like the Azure services on the left-hand side, always growing with versions, components, and iterations as it comes out. So that's the view of the Microsoft stack that is out there. Again, worthwhile always understanding that we are always going to make updates and changes to those, and ideally you have the option of picking those pieces out. However, it needs to be taken into account around the actual life cycle of an application. When do I use what tool? How do I use which tool when? Now, we're trying to encourage as much as possible dev and IT pro in all of our communication and events going forward around this framework slide. Now, traditionally, this has been in our tools section for quite a few years, and now we're spending more and more time with operations people to understand the role they play within this life cycle. So the first piece, which is always the disconnect for operations, the planning phase. Usually, you get to understand a project when the developer asks for some resources. I need some virtual machines. I'm going to do some testing. What are you testing? Oh, no, we're working on this new application. What is the app? How does it work? Where does it go? Oh, it's just to give me the virtual machines. We're trying to encourage operations people have the discussion one step earlier. Be involved in the architecture. Be involved with the business analysts. Understand what they're trying to achieve. And then understand where is it going to sit, who's going to manage, who's going to look after, who's going to report, and what are the SLAs attached to that. And then start the process of developing code, moving towards releasing that, supporting that, and operating that. And the last piece, kind of learning along the way. How do I, as an operations person, have a view of what's going out in the environment from an application layer and an infrastructure layer, and feed that back to the developers in the business? So when the updates come out, or the fixes, or the patches, or the next version, we've actually learned from that along the way. And the cycle should obviously move a lot quicker, faster, etc. So this slide, you'll see more and more on the operations side in many of our events going forward on the technical discussions around this framework. Now, let's flatten that layer a little bit. And this is where we're going to plug in the tools that I'm going to show you today. So if you look in the top left-hand side, the people component, those personas that we spoke about a few minutes ago. The bottom, the process section, which should always be constant no matter what the life cycle is of the application. And then from ideation all the way through the application life cycle. Whether we go from develop all the way to the end, there's process all along the way. And that's a framework slide that we're going to be spending more and more time sharing with our field as we go forward, with our audience as we go forward. Now we're going to plug in the next two slides, the Microsoft components, and then our interaction with open source. So now this piece over here starts to plug in the different pieces, whether it be Windows Server, Microsoft Azure, Visual Studio Online, or the process component from the System Center layer as well. Now it's not just Microsoft that we're focusing on when we look at DevOps. We've understood that the real world is not everyone has that or uses all of that. And that's a big change for us. But traditionally, we've always gone, you know, it's ours and that's it. And so we're spending a huge amount of effort, a huge amount of time understanding the real ecosystem out there for non-Microsoft components as well. So taking that same framework into mind, if you're not a developer, it's worthwhile understanding when you move back, when you go home next week, what tool sets do they actually use for source control, for developing, for testing, for configuration management? And then understanding, does your Microsoft tools you possibly use on the infrastructure side plug into that? Now, this piece is always growing, very much similar to the Microsoft Azure component and the Visual Studio Online component. As the open source community enhances, changes, releases updates, we're trying to stay abreast of that from an integration perspective. So the next slide over here throws up this URL over here. And I'm just going to quickly switch across to that, just to give you a view of a URL that's worthwhile bookmarking and having a look repeatedly at what are the updates that are coming out from Microsoft around the open source technology. If you drill into this component and actually have a look at the project section, there's a DevOps section. And breaking into that, you get a view of what we're doing around the Microsoft integration with the previous slide set of tools that I showed you. If you drill into projects, you'll get exactly that same view over here individually for those pieces. If you're not a developer and you've never heard of some of these components before, it's really worthwhile going back to the office and understanding from your development team, hey man, what do you guys actually use? Ah, you use that. You use a bit of Chef, a bit of SaltStack. Right, what is that about? What is Microsoft doing around that? And then drilling into these components. So if we drill into the Chef component as an example, and maybe look at the news, get a view of what we're actually doing, get a nice article around how do we start to use some of these components. There we go. How do we use some of these components that might be available for us in our environment? If I go back one layer, from a tutorials perspective, how would I use some of these components? How do I actually work with these pieces? So as a last takeaway around resources, that is one piece that's really worthwhile bookmarking and going forward from an education perspective. Okay, so before we climb into demonstrations, what do we need to understand as an operations person? Or a business person that might have operations people that report to him, or developers that report to him? What role should I have in this application lifecycle process? So a couple of questions. Firstly, where does the application live? Where does it start? Where is it going to be housed? Because at some point, the infrastructure is going to be required. Doesn't matter where the infrastructure is, that's not the question anymore. The question is, where should it be? And when it's there, who's going to look after it? Who's going to maintain it? And these are key questions to take away when you get to that planning phase. Again, operations should be in the planning section. So for example, do we have sensitive data? If so, where's it going to sit? What authorities do I have to abide by when I look at housing the sensitive data? On premises, public, both? Key questions. Again, there's no point the application coming, and then the question gets asked, because that's a far way down the journey from a usage perspective. All right, so the second phase. So we've done planning, we've understood, we've asked some questions, and we've walked away as an operations person. Developer's walked away, he's got his list, he's got his work items, and he's going to build some application with some nice feature sets inside of it. Green giraffes, bunnies, whatever it may be, he's got his list. Operations should ideally walk away as well and go, right, there's sensitive data that has to be stored somewhere. What security am I using? Are we using multi-factor authentication? Is it on premises? Is it public? Am I hosting this content? So when we come back again and start moving through the develop cycle, we understand the components. And ideally, we shorten down the scale for rolling out infrastructure. Alongside the discussions we've had this week around rolling out infrastructure when developers want to write code and test, there's been some interesting timelines that I've heard around how long it takes to actually push resources out, from a day to a week to a few weeks to a bit longer. That's frustrating for developers. They want to produce quicker. They want to become more agile. They want to become more dynamic. If we as operations are slowing that down, we're not their friends. It's going to be a struggle. So ideally, when we get to this stage, we should be ready to assist developers along the way around using infrastructure. So what we're going to have a look at now is I'm going to take you through a demonstration which will show you what I'm going to put on the slides in a few seconds around Visual Studio Online and TFS, Team Foundation Server, and the integration that we have with our infrastructure tool sets from a management perspective. So online services, are our developers using those? They possibly are. They might not be allowed to, but they're possibly using it to become more dynamic. Well, what services does Microsoft offer around that? And what should I care about as an IT pro that is involved in this DevOps movement? Last piece, testing automation. How do I assist developers to become more dynamic, to test quicker, to produce faults quicker so they can repair quicker and move forward? So what we're going to have a look at now is understanding what is integration pieces around on-premises and online, and understand the view that developers have, but as an operations person, what can I do as well to try and make life a little bit easier with some of the tools that I possibly own? So taking into account now, this is that develop phase. We're building out infrastructure to provide dynamically for our development teams that we work with. Okay, so the first piece. And each demonstration I'm going to show you, I'm going to give you a quick 1 minute on configuration just to understand what's happening in the background and how the tool sets are working together, and then step into the user experience from a developer operations person. So the first piece is looking at Team Foundation Server 2013, update 3 that's currently come out a few weeks ago, and the integration with Virtual Machine Manager on the other side. So a quick look and feel around that. How would it be used? And how would I use that if I was doing things with Visual Studio Online? So kind of building up that private, hybrid, and public story that I showed you in the slide a few minutes ago. As a simple example, the lab management component within TFS requires a connection through to Virtual Machine Manager, the management component for our hypervisors out in your infrastructure side. Very simple. It just needs to know what is the DNS name and what VLAN can, or what network address can I use for network isolation. Because my developers possibly might want to isolate their environment when they do their testing. They might take a copy of production and move it across, and we don't want any conflict along the way. So ideally, they would love to have that flexibility. If we're not dynamic enough to give them a separate VLAN or give them the information or give them the isolated environment, we're stopping that piece of real-world testing against a copy from production. So a small little example to configure and set up. Literally 2 clicks and we're through. Then we need to drill down and understand from the developer the projects they have. And when they start to work and develop code, which projects do they have? Because there might be multiple projects. We might have multiple infrastructure environments we want to give them, multiple clouds we want to give them. We need to start defining that. So when we get to this section over here, we need to understand from a configuration perspective, where is all this testing going to be done and how am I going to manage that from a cloud perspective? Because as an operations person, I can still define that cloud on the other side, which will be the next component. So within this location over here, I can start to get quite granular and say, right, you can only, for this project, develop on this cloud, on this physical infrastructure over here. So I can get very granular and I can control that as an operations person. So I'm happy, I'm controlled, but I've become dynamic back to my developer on the other side. The same when we look at shares and actually storing content and using content. I can get very granular of where this content resides from a library perspective of where our artifacts are stored. So configuration, not rocket science, kind of simple, but ideally now I've got two tool sets talking to each other along the way. From a user's perspective, once I make that connection across and I step into Virtual Machine Manager, I start to build out clouds that are available for me. Now I can use those clouds and I can start to define restrictions. I can start to define policy on that. So now I'm giving a dynamic environment to my developers, but I'm applying restrictions along the way to suit me as the operations person to ensure that nothing really goes wrong along the way. So all of a sudden, I'm getting a bit more granular of what I can do with my developers. What storage? What networking? You're doing testing? Great, he has a cloud for you on cheap storage, old servers. Ready to move to pre-prod? Well, he has more storage. He has faster storage. He has bigger servers, more processing power. I can start to work and get quite granular around those components. Again, all of a sudden, I'm assisting developers to become more agile in a way. This all of a sudden starts that conversation around making life a little bit easier between the two parties. Now, how would this be used? Because now I've configured, it's up and running, it's set, ready to go. As a developer, and again, this is the key takeaway in all the different demonstrations today, I don't want my developers having to learn System Center and vice versa. I don't want my developer, my IT pros, to learn Visual Studio Online. They shouldn't have to. They should work within their speciality. So in this component now, they will stay within their tools and work within the tool sets that they know. Integration has been done. I can build environments. The other component is that I'm actually talking back directly to Virtual Machine Manager when I start to build out environments. And VMM is doing all that work for me. Over here, I have a view of a whole lot of templates that have been imported and used that I as a developer can call as I see fit. But it's been defined by my operations people within Virtual Machine Manager on the other side. I've set the specs as an operation person. How much CPU, what license key, what version, what scripts, etc., etc. Developer, he just pulls those components as he needs them. The IT pro can't build that if the developer hasn't given the feedback. If the developer hasn't said, I need this much CPU, please run this script afterwards, please install my test agent like this, please do this. This, you don't get to this result at the end of the day. Ideally, the process should be, select the one you want. So let's build a new environment. Let's call it TechEd Europe. Select your templates, whatever it may be. Pull them in. Now all I've done is I have a configuration that I can use as an environment. When I finish deploying this, Virtual Machine Manager kicks into gear and starts building that environment up. Now my developer can walk away and start to actually work with the environment that's been built for him. But in the background, what have I done? I've actually restricted my developer into his cloud, cheaper storage, older servers. But it doesn't matter. He just wants to work as quickly as possible to spin up environments and write code and test going forward. So slight integration between those components, between those products. If we now take that one step further, the environment's built, it's being used as an example. He has one running over here. I can let my developer do his own work, working with his own environment. But again, through Hyper-V, Windows Server, I can start to provide him some resilience as well from a snapshotting perspective. So he can start to build in versioning around him working with these virtual machines. So here he is working with a virtual machine that's been spun up in an environment. You know, it's really simple. Work with it, log in, do whatever work you have to do if it's manual. If I need to, drop into snapshots. Let's build myself a new snapshot that I might want to have. All that's happening is Hyper-V is doing the work on the other side. Again, I restrict him. I do some orchestration to ensure that he can have a maximum of 5 snapshots. After his 5th snapshot, we keep truncating the older ones. So I'm hemming him in. But I'm giving him the ability to do his code testing and checking quite dynamically along the way. So slight look and feel how a developer can start to work with these pieces, start to work with these components between an on-premises perspective, from a system center perspective, as well as from a Visual Studio perspective. Now, what does it actually look like? If my developer wants to switch between on-premises or Visual Studio Online, again, stay within the tools that you know. So over here, we're using Visual Studio. That's the tool he knows. That's what his bread and butter comes from. On top right-hand side, there's 2 areas he can work with. The one that we've been working with now from an on-premises perspective, or he can stretch across to Visual Studio Online. And this is the roadmap around blurring tool sets together. So making it more agile for developers to pick what they need when they need it. But the key piece is the operations people need to understand that. As this can get out of control, think of an Azure subscription. How do we control that? How do we build control into that? How do we build flexibility into that as well along the way? So as a developer, I can start to target these areas over here. So let's work with on-premises first. Let's expose that one first. So from a builds perspective, I can now start to work with this component. I'm not going to step through all the little wizards. I'm just going to focus on the area that I've shown you for the last few minutes. Now, all of a sudden, I can configure my build workflow to target that environment that I've built through Lab Manager, which in the background, Virtual Machine Manager was orchestrating for me on the other side. I can drill into this, select the environment that I have. Have we given him an option of snapshots? Maybe we have. Now he can start to pull his snapshots out. Do you slowly see how all those components are starting to tie together along the way? From a simple thing like Hyper-V, Windows Server, environments, VMM, Visual Studio, we're starting to make it a bit more dynamic for him to use along the way. Then he can drill in a little bit deeper if he wanted to. Let's make it a quick simple. And start to get quite granular around targeting the components that sit inside of that environment. That becomes dynamic for those developers along the way. Now, what happens if he starts to stretch across and go to Visual Studio Online? And this is where that fine line around the blur becomes quite important to understand as an operations person. If you sat in the planning session with the developer, well, where are you doing your dev test? Well, we have a subscription through MSDN, or we've bought an Azure subscription. Great. How do we assist you with that? How do we assist you build out that infrastructure as simple as possible for you to use the components within Azure that are always growing? That is key. Otherwise, they're going to start to do their own and start to work with their own components and move out of a process structure altogether. So I move back over here now again. And just jump back into the online component. Again, I can step in here now, and I haven't left my tools. I stay there as a developer. But in the background, I always need to assure as an operations person, I understand what they're doing. Because when they get to this piece and they're deploying out to Microsoft Azure in a public cloud, where's the data? Is it sensitive? Have they thought about that? When an operations call gets logged that something's broken, someone's missing something, where is this sitting? Where is the component sitting? So does that make sense around why process fits along the whole way from beginning to end? But it's very important to understand in the beginning what that piece is along the way. So that's a bit of a view of the planning piece moving into develop. Now the developer goes away and he starts to work with these components and starts to come back and wants to release code along the way. Where he releases, how he releases is key to understand now as an operations person as well. So if we move one step out, just jump across here to set context quickly. Think of your own environment that you have where you work. If you're an operations person, what is my developer actually doing when he moves from development into release of code? When he releases, how do I allow him to release? Do I allow him to release, or does he let me know he's released? Where do I sit in that environment as an operations person? Because ideally, I support that. I have SLA. I'm accountable for that along the way. We made an acquisition a little while ago, which is now called Release Management. It sits within the Visual Studio stable of products, and that is a very key cog for us in moving in that cycle from the develop into the release phase. This slide will kind of set a context of where all these pieces tie together. At the bottom, quite a wide variety of choices that you could have from a platform perspective, whether it be simple Windows Server, whether it be Microsoft Azure, AWS, VMware, not too concerned of what the platform layer is. But above that, and hopefully this week you've attended some of these interesting sessions around configuration management, how do I start to build out a standard state? Whether I use Microsoft tool sets, whether I use some of our partners' tool sets with the likes of Chef and Puppet. How do I, as an infrastructure person, ensure that configuration is consistent? Whether I release and then configure, or do I configure and then release? Two different outcomes depending which route you go down. So now release management ties into that from the Visual Studio stable. And that piece now allows us to target the bottom layer at the bottom. Whether I use VMware, whether I use Hyper-V, whether I use a public cloud or a private cloud provider. Not too concerned about that bottom layer. I just want to ensure as an operations person, my developer has a configuration that is standard. Because if it's standard, or as close as possible to standard, it makes it a bit easier once the code has been released out into pre-prod or production along the way. So we're going to spend a bit of time now understanding that top layer, the release management component. And this again is where the OpenTech site that I showed you becomes very important to understand. So you'll see that we have the integration over here around configuration management. This is very key to look at, do my developers use open source technology like a Chef or a Puppet or similar? Because if they do, how do I start to bring that into configuration management for the state that I want to use when applications get rolled out? Because once it's rolled out, I'm looking after it as an operations person. So this is a nice little view of, no matter where you sit, we're trying to provide as many solutions as possible from the release perspective. So release management. It's a simple look and feel tool, but a very in-depth tool that is growing as we bring out more and more updates to Visual Studio. At the moment, we've come out with update 3, and we've started to integrate the movement with Microsoft Azure from a vNext perspective. And then again, like the demonstration a little bit earlier, my developer should work in the tool he knows and then stretch to when he releases where he needs to, whether it be on premises, whether it be in public, or whether it be a stretch across both. We're going to step through this release management in a few minutes, but the slide here is just to position the components you need to work with and understand. So from a continuous deployment perspective, where and how are my developers releasing code? Are they able to do continuous deployment, or are they hampered along the way? We have continuous deployment, we can move quicker and move faster. But there's no point having continuous deployment and a lot of failures along the way as well. That's not going to achieve a likable result. So ideally, release management becomes important to move through that process. But as an operations person, what am I putting in place to ensure configuration is consistent? That when it gets pushed out to my infrastructure, I know what's on that box or on that virtual machine or in that location when the code is released along the way. This piece over here, around consistent releases, is to give a view for everyone involved, business, developer, and IT pro. This is not just a developer tool. This is a tool for all three personas in that people stage I spoke about. Everyone needs to have a view of what is happening. If code is released, who approved it? Who should have approved it? If it was a failure, why did they approve it? Did they learn from those mistakes? At what stage do we bring change management into the release as well along the way? All those key components is words that IT pros understand. Change control, SLA, process. We want to bring that back into this tool set for developers to understand how we can work close together. So as I step through the demonstration, I'm going to show you the configuration piece first again, and then I'm going to explain to you the flow of how the components would work. And as an IT pro, where can I provide tool sets that allow my developers to leverage off learnings I have out of infrastructure management along the way? Because as an operations person, I have quite a stack of tools, whether it be PowerShell scripts, whether it possibly be DSC that I use, or whether it be batch files. How do I use that to enable my developers to do a little bit more? But the last discussion around release management is to start taking the mindset of stages. How do I work in that cycle that we saw, but how do I step it through stages? And how do I approve stages? Bringing process into this along the way. So once I've looked at it and shown you the configuration, I'll show you the components, the release paths, how it looks, how it works. The last takeaway will be, how do I use this to build in the stages and approval process along the way? Okay, so let's step across. One more slide. This last piece over here, very key for business. No disrespect to business, but ideally we don't want business having to have consoles installed on their machines and then clicking and saying, what does this do? What does that do? Right click, stop. We don't really want to get to that level with business. Ideally, we want to give them an interface to a workflow system that they're comfortable with using from a dashboarding perspective. So as we go from release into actual monitoring a bit later with Visual Studio Online, we want to bring out a consistent look and feel for business along the way. If you use a SharePoint, if you've got your own custom dashboards, how do I take release management's view into a monitoring view, into a full dashboard for business to understand what is actually happening along the way? All right, so let's step across for a quick second to release management. This current version is the update 3 version that we released a little while ago. And the changes will come quite quickly to this piece as well. But the changes will really come from an integration with the likes of DSC, the move down, the Chef and Puppet root integration, but also a lot of effort into the Visual Studio Online movement around release management. We're going to step through these components over here for a quick second. So we're going to understand what administration is required, what can I talk to, what can I configure, and ideally as an operations person, how can I bring process and a bit of security along the way into this release management component? Then we'll have a look at the paths and the applications. And the last piece will be, how do I provide support to my developers from a tooling perspective? Whether it be simple things as command line, batch files, or real in-depth configuration management that we can support and assist them with. On the administration side, there's two pieces. The integration, we saw a little bit earlier with TFS, Team Foundation Server, and then the Azure integration as well. So depending on your environment and your developers and how they operate, if they only have on-premises with TFS natively, that's been there with release management, but the new version update 3, I can now stretch that across to an Azure subscription or subscriptions as well, and then pull in those virtual machines for use by the developers in those various stages as they move from development, staging, pre-prod, prod, etc. So we'll step through this tab, we'll step through a couple of the components around the configuration, and then we'll see exactly what the experience is like for developers as they use this, and where should an operations person start providing input and kind of taking control back around the release process as well. So the first piece around Team Foundation Server, it's really, again, not the hardest configuration to set up. All that really is required is to understand where and who and what is the password for me to do this. Now, if you've never worked with developers before closely, you've never understood how they've worked with their security accounts, etc., you'll probably find that they do quite a lot of local accounts and local authentication on their machines and devices that they use. We're trying to encourage operations people, try and bring that back to good old Active Directory and security groups. And so you'll see a lot more components as we move through the updates for release management, trying to push forward through that. Bringing back process so that the right security group approves the application. So when the application goes from pre-prod to prod on a Friday night, the right person, the right security group has approved it to move through into that stage. Opposed to username 123 at password, who's gone and clicked, yeah, let's just release that, and we have no idea who that is. Because ideally, I can tie that back in to my other process management tools along the way. The other piece is the TFS piece, the Azure component. Again, not hard to set up around the integration perspective. Ideally, I need to just pull down my publish settings file and pull out the key components around the management certificate, around the storage account of where my virtual machines are going to be hosting their infrastructure for storage, and then what am I going to actually use as my ID, all pulled within that publish settings file. I've already got mine configured and set up over here. So if I just close that for a second and drill back into this one, it's very simple look and feel, nothing really rocket science behind it. But once I do that piece, I have the ability now to link my infrastructure that I've possibly built up already on the Azure side into release management. And again, in the planning phase, developers, business, are we using Azure as an example? Yeah, we've got a couple of subscriptions that we've been doing some dev tests, great. How do we pull that back into this? Because now we start to get a view of where everything is sitting. Because that dev test could very quickly become production. Not great if you're supporting an application that has failed. So ideally, we want to pull that information back into this and have a single view around on-premises and the Microsoft Azure component as well. Once I pull this piece in together, I can start to dig a little bit deep and have a view of what infrastructure do I have sitting in the Azure component. Sorry, just try this for a second. If I move back to my path section and I start to drill into my environments, now I'm starting to get a view of where this work and effort takes place, whether it be on-premises, whether it be in the Azure component. If I drill in a little bit deeper over here, sorry, wrong one. Let's jump out of that. So I've drilled into that Azure subscription that I had attached over there, and now I can start to link servers in that subscription to this location that can then be used by developers for whatever purpose they need on the other side. This link Azure servers over here is going to interrogate that subscription and pull back a list of all the virtual machines that are available, and then give you a view of which ones are on. You can then pull in and tag the relevant pieces that you want to add into this environment that developers are allowed to use. So if I say link Azure servers, it'll do a quick poll for a few seconds, and it'll pull this information back. If I just sort that by IP address, give me a view of the ones that are running at the moment. So I now have a view of virtual machines in that subscription. Now I can pull those in, link it into this environment. That environment can then be targeted and used in the stages as developers move their code from beginning to pre-prod to prod along the way. If I just step out for 1 second back to this location over here, that's all I'm looking at on the other side. If I pull that next to each other, is my virtual machines. Ideally, you need to have a view of that. As Microsoft, we obviously give a lot of benefits to developers. MSDN is one of those. And there's probably a few Azure subscriptions that have been set up and running. And there could be quite a nice list of virtual machines. Well, why don't we pull that back in for them into the release management component? How do we start to give them some structure around how they use their infrastructure along the way? So that's the small piece around the integration, configuration, look and feel around how I would use these pieces. Now we move to the next section, which is actually developers moving their code through those different stages along the way. And when they move them, what are they targeting? When they move them, what tools are they using? When they move the code, how can we assist them from a monitoring perspective as well? Again, it doesn't matter if it's on premises or in the public cloud. We want to ensure that we can provide as much feedback as possible as the application moves through. And as we move from release into monitoring in the next little discussion now, we want to start to take the learnings from here into the production rollout along the way. So as my developers build out their environments, I want to try and assist them with the likes of the Microsoft monitoring agent. Let me monitor these servers that you have running. They're not in production. They don't sit in my monitoring tool sets. Let me start monitoring these for you so you can get real-time stats back. Get a real-world view of what your application is doing before you even get to pre-prod, as an example. Now you've learned. Pre-prod, well, we've fixed a few issues. Jumped across to production. Now I'll monitor you with my normal production environment that I might have running from an infrastructure perspective. So if we look at the paths for a few seconds, this will just give you a view now of once the infrastructure is set up and you've allowed them, you've enabled them to use either on-premises or Microsoft Azure, what can they start to do in rolling their code out and moving from stage to stage? So what you have over here is a view of the paths. So I've just kind of thrown out the terms a few times now, staging, pre-prod, Q&A, dev, etc. These are the stages you can add in. Hopefully, moving down this life cycle, you've sat in the planning engagement, you've sat in the planning meetings. How many stages do you need? We need 3 stages. Great. What infrastructure do you want in the background of those stages? Oh, I need some on-premises, I need some Azure stuff. And you can start as an operations person building that infrastructure out. So when it comes to this time of creating those stages, we just target the relevant infrastructure, the relevant environments, and then set the relevant approvers along the way. And what does that look like? Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have zoomed out there. If I zoom back in here for a second, I can now step through, select the stages, whether it be on-premises, whether it be Microsoft Azure. I can select the security group, hopefully, that is the people that are allowed to approve this application to move to the next stage. Because the app won't go through unless it's been approved, unless you've unchecked from an automated build perspective. So these areas here, all of a sudden, need to be completed from the planning stage's information gathering. And ideally, as you see, as you move through these different phases, it becomes quite important to understand interaction as an operations person, because someone has to provide this input when we start to build these environments out to be used in these different stages along the way. Now, that's a very simple example. It's only three stages. I mean, adding stages is, it's really simple. Add, pick the environment that you want. Where am I targeting? What is it going to be? Who is it? And I can add multiple. Again, I can only add that in once I understand as an operations person how I can provide the infrastructure as the developer builds out these stages within release management. Okay, so we've kind of moved a few steps now in release management. We have infrastructure. We're starting to build out these stages. How does it actually work to move code through these different stages along the way? And as an operations person, how do I start to interact with that now and provide feedback to my development team? And not just feedback, but also valuable information and tools they can use to make their lives a little bit easier. If I move into the app section now, so let me cancel this for a second. Close. And again, you'll see in the top left-hand side, release templates and vNext release templates. Am I doing it on-premises? Am I doing it on Microsoft Azure? Depending on those pieces. If I collapse this for a second quickly over here, you'll see at the top left over here, I have my stages. And I would step through those, and the developer would configure his code possibly to run a little bit differently. I run my code in the dev stage. I learn a few things. I make some modifications, make some changes. My code might trim a little bit. Great, I move to the next stage. Run, learn, next stage. Run, learn, until we get to pre-prod, prod, and we've learned hopefully along the way of how my code should react as we move from stage to stage. But as I step through these components over here, if I expand this up and we're just in the first stage, and let's just say we open up one of these over here. Sorry, 1, 2, 4. I can now start to get a view on the left-hand side of the toolbox as a developer. Now, these are native out-the-box tools you're looking at the moment. I can start to use those tools in my flow for this stage. Now, this is where operations can become really useful and very powerful in assisting developers as they move their code through the different stages. These are default tools on the left-hand side, and really it's not an in-depth piece to go, right, start a VM, drag it across, add it in, configure it, which one should it be. That's drag and drop around that. But the takeaway on this piece is now as an operations person, how can I assist populate this piece over here? How can I grow that for my developers from a configuration management perspective, from an enabling perspective? How can I take learnings that I currently have in production of managing servers, managing the development servers that you know probably in depth compared to the developers? Do I have a batch file that I run every Monday morning on this web server to achieve this result? If that's the case, why does that batch file not become part of the process for developers as they use these pieces? If you've moved up a bit from batch files, you're standing in that lovely thing called PowerShell, version 5 that we're about to launch. I don't know how to answer that, say that statement. That I don't know if we've launched or not launched it yet. But version 5 with DSC, how do I pull those learnings and pieces back into this process? Now, this is where as an operations person, again, in the planning stage, what are you doing? Where are you targeting? What do you need? Great. I walk away. I build the tools. I provide them back for the developer to use along the way. The process to actually do that is back down in the inventory section. And this is where we have a look at our actions and our tools. And this is now going to slowly tie back again to the first piece that we spoke about from planning into develop and from the testing stage perspective. If I look at my tools, these are actually my components that do all the work, little engines, whether it be IIS Manager, whether it be the Microsoft Test Manager from Visual Studio, that's the engine. I then need to customize that based on the result that I want. So I can call those pieces. I can also add my own in there if I want to as well. So if I step one layer out, and I look at the action section, these are the pieces the developers can add into their toolbox a few clicks ago. So if I start to populate this a little bit more, and I start to customize this for production releases, this enables my developer to start to leverage the learnings that I've had along the way of managing operation servers. Simple example. Let's have a look at start an Azure VM over here. That was the one I dragged across a little bit earlier, start an Azure VM. So I can drill into this now, start to customize, using the VM Manager tool, but I can customize in the red there, what am I targeting? What am I using? Well, if I've bought in my Azure subscription and I've linked it, I can start to leverage those VMs. Maybe in the deployment process of the application, there's a reason to restart that virtual machine in Microsoft Azure. Great, let me customize this, enable it, toolbox, developer can call it when he needs it. Now I have a standard tool that can be used repeatedly all the time. But it could be a lot more in depth than that. It could be when this app gets rolled out, what is the state of that server? What roles? What features? Do you need basic authentication, a simple little thing? Do you need .NET 3 opposed to 4.5 there as well? If it's not there, put it there. Then do the application deployment. So all of a sudden, my developer can pull across some PowerShell components that will ensure that every time this app is released, it's in the required state. And that's the view of what operations now need to start providing some input back into this release management piece. Because when the app reaches the final stage, you have to support it along the way. So this piece becomes quite important. Now, earlier I showed you the testing stage for the developer. So using Microsoft Test Manager, he builds an environment, drags some templates across, VMM builds that out. How can I leverage that as well using release management and the tools that we've worked with now? So if I close that for a second and I step back in here again and do a quick search. Oh, sorry, wrong one. Over here. There's a default action with a test manager. And what does it need? It just needs information to be populated around where am I going to carry these actions and results out. So we've built the environment using Test Manager. We're using Visual Studio to do our tests, work with the components. VMM has built the infrastructure underneath it for the developer. Now I come to release management. I can call that environment and use it as I see fit as the code moves through those stages. Does that give you a view of how the tools are slowly tying together? Whether it be on-premises, whether in Microsoft Azure, we're not fazed by that anymore. But ideally, operations should be able to provide that input along those pieces, along that way. So this is now moving us from planning into develop, into release, and hopefully you've seen a little consistent piece through this, is the interaction between all the personas along the way. The developer, the operations person providing input along the way, and ideally the business getting the value at the end along this way. Now we move to the next piece, which is the operations piece, the actual monitoring piece where we want to learn. Whether it be the developer learning, whether it be the IT pro learning, learnings come out of what we've rolled out from an application deployment perspective. So I'll move out for that for a second. And just jump back to this to set the context quickly. This piece now in that cycle is kind of that operations piece to manage, but also to learn and provide feedback in that cycle. Because if we provide consistent, regular, and in-depth feedback to developers and to business, learnings come out of that. Releases come quicker, lessons are learned quicker, and ideally there should be value back to all three parties along the way. The APM piece, the application performance monitoring piece, is in an interesting stage for Microsoft, a very good interesting stage, where we're starting to have some real in-depth insights into applications. Whether it be on-premises, whether it be in Microsoft Azure, again, not too worried about where the application sits. But this has a huge amount of value and benefit to everyone involved in this DevOps movement. Whether it be a simple thing of why did it break, lesson learned, or give me a view as I trend. If I'm running competitions, promotions, I'm scaling, I'm acquiring businesses, I'm bringing workload into my applications, to my infrastructure, what is actually happening? Give me insight into my application as a developer. Then give me insight as an operations person, what is the impact to my infrastructure? Again, whether it's my Azure virtual machines, my Azure storage, whether it's my on-premises VMs, my networking, doesn't really matter. Ideally, we want to have a full view of insight into all of that. The first piece, and this will kind of be broken into two pieces, but I'll give you a full view once we finish this demonstration, is the operations manager perspective of monitoring an application. I'll set some context of the configuration between development and management tools, and then we'll go across and have a look and understand from an app insights perspective, what is Microsoft's view around the public cloud and monitoring applications and infrastructure. The application insights piece is still in preview at the moment, but we're adding more and more features. We added some more this week, ironically, which was interesting when I was prepping for this, because I went back the next day to do something and look, and it had changed. So we're trying to make this as in-depth as possible around feature sets, around a view into your actual application. So we're going to have a look at two pieces now. The configuration required to actually monitor an application, quick 1 minute view of that. But then what is the experience for an operations person monitoring an application, and what is the experience for a developer receiving that information, and possibly a bit of backwards and forwards. And then when I start to stretch out, move across the public cloud perspective on the App Insights view, what do I get as an operations person, and as a developer, what is my view? And you'll slowly see the similarities across all of those components from both personas' perspective. So let's jump across quickly to, and I'm going to step you through all the dashboarding components now as we look at the demonstration. Okay, so this environment, from a configuration perspective, sorry, let me step back one second over here. Very simple configuration, just monitoring a .NET application. But again, I want to just show this because, again, we can't complete this if we don't have the information from the planning stage. So when it comes to monitoring an application, and we're all ready to monitor an app, well, where is it? What is it doing? What should I monitor? Fast, slow, up, down. How fast, how slow? How regular must it be down before I let my developers know about these components? So two pieces to this. From an integration perspective, and I'm going to move these components backwards and forwards now from a usage perspective, very similar to the first piece I showed you, where am I going to push these alerts? When the alerts come into me as ops, where should they go? I might have multiple applications I monitor. I might have multiple developers or development teams that are responsible for only certain applications. Well, I need to route them to the right people and then let the developer take over on his process or development team take over and take that alert or that item and farm it across the relevant developer to work with and fix along the way. However, this piece over here becomes quite important. What am I actually looking at as an operations person? So when I sit in a planning meeting and business says, I would like to have these feature sets, and the developer says, no problem, we'll give them all to you, how should I monitor them? All those feature sets, what should the experience be? What should the user's experience be? If it's too slow for a user doing something in a particular part of an application, do you want to be alerted? Because we can alert you to the nth degree, but will it be too much for you as an operator, as a developer, feeding all this information into your tool sets? So ideally now, this is where the planning phase, we step through, we ask the questions, we get the information back, we start to do the testing. If we've done the testing in those stages in release management, we can start to get some fine tuning along the way. So by the time we hit production, where we are now, we have fine tuned the monitoring. So we don't start to get any false alerts, useless alerts, or too many of nothing. So again, the interaction in the release phase of an operations person with monitoring an application as it moves through those different stages becomes quite critical and important. And I'm showing you operations manager, but it doesn't have to be limited to that. If you look at the MS Open Tech site, we have interaction with third-party monitoring tools as well. We have integration with them as well. So if you're not using Ops Manager, using some of the ones that we have on that site, again, same principles around involvement for operations and development teams in what to monitor and how to monitor along the way. Okay, so what would this be like as an experience perspective? Very simple example, nothing in depth to show. From a usage perspective, but I just want to show the alerts moving backwards and forwards, the view, the results, and then on Visual Studio Online, what is the experience like compared to this? And then ideally, you would match the solutions and the technology to what you have in your particular environment. In this example over here, we have alerts coming through. I'm an operations person. These alerts could come to my call desk, my help desk software, it doesn't really matter, but the alert has come through. It has information. Now, if I actually open this up and I expose this as an operations person, and I read something like that, I go, great, something's happened. There's an exception. Exception means bad. Okay, so what must I do now? Because that doesn't give me a lot of context as an operations person. I could take some initiative, and I can drill into this and have a look and say, well, give me more information on this alert. Let me understand exactly what has gone on from a description perspective. Sorry, let's pause for a second, close this window. Okay. So again, I have a view here. What does this mean? I have no idea what this means. Ideally, the process should be pass this along, give it to the developers who understand what has actually happened. They understand where this is in the code. They understand actually the exception that has been thrown as an example. But the piece I want to show you is the view this operations person has. He's opened this up. He can see what's going on. Is the same consistent view that the developers will have on the other side as well. So now again, there's no mismatch around truth, what happened, what didn't happen. We're all looking at the same information along the way. So if I just close that window for a second, opposed to maximizing it, I can then take this alert and send it across to my engineering team. All that's going to happen when I click that button over there now, opposed to close, so use that configuration I showed you, it's gone across and created a work item on the other side. My developer, stay in the tools you understand and know, I go back to Visual Studio, I start to now interrogate my operational issues. That's the work item type for the alert that's just been created now. So if I drill into that and I say, right, give me a view of all my operational issues, I will see those same alerts that have been assigned to me on the other side from Operations Manager in this case. If I open this up a little bit deeper and I drill into one of these, you'll see at the bottom, very similar look and feel again around the information that's been shared. If I click on that box, same window, same look and feel as the operations person had on the other side. The difference is now, as a developer, I understand this. I know what this is. So, something's actually happened. Right. Let me pull in an IntelliTrace log file. Understand exactly what has happened. And let me start to work with the issue at hand. Great. An exception's happened. Let me debug this. Let me have a view of what's actually gone wrong. The developer stayed in his tools. He's gone nowhere else. With the alert that's come across, he's opened up, he's had a look, he's seen the issue along the way, and can now make a change or put a process in place to make the change. Without going across the operations manager, without getting alerts from an email or anything like that, stay in the tools you understand and the view that you have. This might not be enough information for the developer. He might want a bit more, he might want some more information. He could step out of this now and say, great, you've given me this alert, happy, I understand it, I'll accept it, I've had a look at it, it's a problem on our code side, let me accept that, I'll save those results. But possibly once I've done a bit of interrogation, I might some more information back. So let me just change that to signed. I'm going to give it to myself, because I'm a great developer. I can then come into this and I can make a change and say, you know what? I've run the test, I've had a look, I need more information from my ops team. Please go and run more information for me and then send it back to me on the other side as well. So I can say, right, I'm awaiting evidence this time. Please send more info. With caps lock the other way around. Save those results. Move back to the dashboard again on the other side. Let's do a quick, and hopefully a quick refresh comes through. Oh, there's an awaiting evidence. Expose that. What is the history? Awaiting evidence. Need more info over there. So now we can start the process backwards and forwards. Great, they want some more information. With the integration that we had now with the Service Pack 1 release for Operations Manager, we can now start to allow operations people to do a bit more and in depth. Great, let's run a check for a bit longer. Let's trace that issue that happened. Let's repeat the issue, but give a lot more information back. And then again, start the cycle. Attach it or put in a network location. Let that log file be used by the developer. So very simple look and feel, backwards and forwards. But all of a sudden, there's real insight going backwards and forwards between development and operations. Productive information of what's actually happening. All of a sudden, I'm getting a single view across all of those locations when alerts come in, real, not real, real issues, not real issues, a nice view of what's actually happening from an operations perspective. If I take that one level out now, and I just move back to Internet, good old Internet Explorer, this is Visual Studio Online and App Insights. App Insights, give me a view very similar to what I showed you now around the on-premises perspective, but again, a little bit more dynamic around updates and feature sets that we can provide through this tool set. In this example over here, this is my first view into the dashboard. I can now, as an operations person, spend a bit of time with my developers to understand, again, what are you doing? How? Where? How often? What alerting do you need? Up, down, fast, slow? What thresholds? So once we start to build out this configuration and start to get a view of what's actually happening with my application, as an operations person, I get a view into my infrastructure and the application layer above that. As an app developer, I get a view in the performance and the view of what is actually happening with my application. I can then customize that for good old business. You don't need a console, you just need to have a view through a browser into this lovely dashboard we've made for you. In this dashboard, you have release management. You have app insights. You have our workflow system. You have our ticketing system. You get a view of what's actually happening in this whole DevOps movement that we're busy working with. So as a developer, I can obviously drill into this now. I've got a couple of sites that I'm monitoring over here. Give me a view of the health of what's actually happening. Have there been exceptions, fast, slow, up, down? What's the performance been like? Or I can spend a bit of time in this custom one that I've made over here. So this custom one now is what I would give to business. A bit of availability, have exceptions happened, have things gone wrong along the way? Well, I'm interested to know that, yes, there were some exceptions over here. What's actually happened? Give me a view of what's gone on as business. I can drill into this and say, right, some events have happened. When have they happened? What time? Where? As an example. Drilling a little bit deeper into the exceptions, I get a view of this. If I look at that, does it look very similar to what I showed you a few minutes ago? Again, as an operations person, a business person, I look at this and go, exception, that doesn't sound good. As a developer, I take it to the next level. Through the browser, I then start to integrate and start to leverage the benefits of the tools that I have. If I expose one of those, give me a view again of the alert view. Very similar to what we saw a few minutes ago from an operations management perspective. If I wanted to, drill a little bit deeper, pull down my IntelliTrace file. What's going to happen when I do that? Something a little bit earlier, it's going to open Visual Studio. It's going to show me the code and where the exception has occurred on the other side. All through the browser, leveraging the tools with Visual Studio that I would have installed on my machine as a developer. So all of a sudden, you start to get a view of an operations perspective and performance monitoring perspective, where Microsoft is going. What are we looking at? What are the pain points we're trying to address? And how do we try and make this as simple as possible with the interaction between dev and operations? The other piece to this is learning from this. Now, ideally, this is where a huge amount of time and effort is going to have to be spent around understanding these pieces. But the tools are there. The tools are in place to be used, get access to, and understand. If I step back to the PowerPoint for a quick second, this piece over here is very important from a Microsoft strategy perspective to enable developers to do as much as possible, whether it's our tool sets being used as infrastructure, management, or monitoring, or whether it's third-party plugging in. Microsoft Azure is a big, big play with Visual Studio Online as a service that can be used for developers. But the operations team play a very key role in that. And so hopefully from a usage perspective, an understanding perspective, that lifecycle slide I showed you a little bit earlier in the beginning should give you a view of what Microsoft's view is around IT pros, the audience from operation perspective, and where they fit in along the way. This is ideally where we want to get to around continuous integration, whether it be with Azure, whether it be on-premises, whether it be both. Continuous rolling out of changes, whether it be by minute, by day, by week, whatever the life cycle is, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, that's not real anymore. It takes us back to the original slide I showed you about providing real value back to business and having business agility as the business for your customers on the other side. And your customer can be your normal finance, HR, debtors department. It doesn't have to be the man on the street. The better they work, the more they perform, the more long-term investments the business will make in this whole life cycle. So hopefully you've had a good view from today around where operations should start to fit in. This is a journey from Microsoft's perspective. Information you've seen today will now start to break out into a bit more deeper sections as we go forward from a learnings perspective and from a product update and changes perspective. The last piece I do want to push out is, obviously it's a very busy week. There's a lot of content here. These couple of sessions that have been delivered by my colleagues are very key to the pieces that I've shown you today. Whether it be using the new Azure portal around building applications for developers, whether it be DSC and where it plays a layer around configuration management, whether it be integration with Chef and Puppet as an example, or whether it be actually looking at app insights at a deeper level. So I've kind of cherry-picked those, but I actually do have a Word document with about 13 different sessions on it that we've delivered this week that cover just the DevOps piece from an operations perspective. If that is something you're keen to get your hands on, you're more than welcome to come past on the way out and grab a business card and send me an email. And I'll gladly share that list with you to pull the content down off Channel 9 once you've gone back home. The last thing I would like to ask you is, and it's been a bit of an interesting week this week, is submission of evals. We really would like to ask a quick evaluation submission when you get a chance today or next week if possible, around the view, around the content, and where we're going around the operations integration in this DevOps movement. Otherwise, thank you very much for your time, especially on a Friday afternoon, and I hope you all travel back safely to the different parts of the world that you've come from. Cool. Thank you very much. And if you want to, please, I'm here at lunch. I'm here for a while. I'm here till tomorrow. So you're more than welcome to come and stand and chat and ask questions as well, please.